Waiting for the sound. Good morning, dear Sangha. Today is October the 6th, right? In the year 2011, and we are in the Blue Cliff Monastery in the Great Togetherness Meditation Hall. On our second day of the retreat, stepping into freedom, savoring life. When you love someone, you would like to offer him or her something. That's very natural. When we love someone, we want to give him or her something beautiful that can make him or her happy. That is true love. What is the best thing we can offer him or her? That is a question. You might think that you have to go to the supermarket and buy something. But that may not be the best thing you can offer him or her. I know a young man, 11 years old. He suffered. His father was a very rich businessman. And he and his father could afford to buy anything that he wanted. But the young man was not happy. He had so many things, but no gift bought from the market can make him happy. So that morning, during breakfast time, his father said, "My son, tomorrow will be your birthday, right? Do you want anything I can buy for you?" Of course, his father wants to love him and make him happy. That is why he offered to buy something for him. But the young man did not want anything. He just wanted one thing. That is the presence of his father. His father was so busy. He's so busy with his business. He's always busy. He did not have time for himself, for his wife, for his child. Always absorbed in his business. Well, there are times when he was home, but he's not exactly home. His body is there, but his mind is somewhere. So the young man felt that even he had a father, but he did not feel that he really has a father. His father is not available to him. Sometimes our body is there, but our mind is not there. And that happens to many of us. You feel lonely because he is not truly there, although his body is there. Maybe you should try to come close to him and pat on his shoulder and say, anybody home? Because that is an empty house. No one was inside. And that might help. So his father, there was time when his father was home, but he's not really home. And the child and the young man felt very lonely. But that morning, he suddenly found the answer. He said, Daddy, what I want is you. Yes, when you love someone, the best thing you can offer him or her is your presence. You have to be there for him, for her. And to be there, your mind and your body should be together. And there is a way to bring the mind home to the body, many ways. And in the tradition of Buddhist practice, there is the way of breathing in mindfully, or making a step mindfully. You need only one in-breath or one step in order to bring your mind home to your body and become fully present in the here and the now. When you breathe in mindfully, it takes only 2 seconds or 3 seconds. And yet, your in-breath can bring your mind home to your body. And when mind and body are together, you are truly there. And when you are truly there, you have something to offer to your beloved one. That is your presence, your true presence. Not only your body is there, but your mind is there with your body. So mindful breathing is one practice that can bring mind and body together. It does not take a long time, maybe 2, 3, 4 seconds. And this is the practice here. We have to be there for ourselves. We have to be there for our beloved one. We have to be there for life. And breathing in mindfully, breathing out mindfully, or making a step mindfully can produce our true presence. So if the father of that young man knew the practice, he would begin to breathe in mindfully. And in no time at all, 3 seconds, he can bring his mind home to his body and be fully present in the here and the now. It's easy. It does not take much time. And when he is truly there, he can look into the eyes of his son and say, Darling, you know something? I'm here for you. And that's the best kind of gift that a lover can offer to his or her beloved one. That is a practice of true love in the Buddhist tradition. I like to ask you all, how can you love if you are not there? To love means to be there. And to be there is a practice. If you know how to practice mindful breathing, you can be there in just a few seconds. If you know how to be there, you can practice walking mindfully, and one step is enough for you to be truly there. So among the 4 mantras that we practice in Plum Village, the first mantra is, Darling, I'm here for you. I offer you my presence. A mantra is a magic formula. And when you pronounce that formula, it works. It produces a miracle. But that magic formula you can pronounce only when you are truly there. If your mind is not with your body, if you are not mindful and concentrated, the mantra is not a mantra, it does not work. Although you say the same words, it does not work. So a mantra is a short formula that you pronounce when your mind and your body are together. You are mindful and concentrated. And if you are mindful and concentrated, the mantra always works. That is why before uttering the mantra, before pronouncing the mantra, we have to practice in order to be truly there, body and mind united. You breathe in, you breathe out. You feel that you are truly here. You are free from thinking about the past or the future. You are not caught either by your projects or your worries. You are free. You are truly there. And you are in a state of being capable to pronounce the mantra. And you look, you go and look into the eyes of the other person, your beloved one. And you pronounce the mantra, "Darling, I'm here for you." That is the first mantra. And it works. It makes you happy and it makes him or her happy right away. I guarantee. If you are mindful, concentrated, and the mantra will work and bring happiness right to you and to the other person. And you don't have to practice it in Sanskrit or Tibetan or Chinese. You can practice it in English. And what is more wonderful is that even if the other person is not there physically, you can practice also. You use your mobile telephone. You breathe in mindfully, breathe out mindfully, and compose the number. And when you hear his voice in the office or at home, you pronounce mantra, "Darling, I'm here for you, do you know?" That make him, her happy and you happy. And you can even send an email that can carry the mantra. And this mantra we can practice several times a day. We nourish ourselves, we nourish the person we love by the practice of this mantra. Remember, my definition of love is simple. To love means to be there for yourself and for him or for her. So I hope that all businessmen who are so busy have an opportunity to learn the mantra, and they could make their son, their daughter, their wife, their husband happy. Your presence is something very precious for him or for her. Without your presence, he or she will cry. That's why we have to offer our presence. And therefore, we don't need money to go and buy something. No. The most precious gift you can give him or her is your presence. And you can make your presence more pleasant, sweeter. About 20 years ago, we, maybe 20 something, We had the first retreat for children in North America. That's in Santa Barbara, California. Children came for a retreat, and their parents came to support them. And during that retreat, we invented a kind of meditation called Pebble Meditation. Pebble meditation makes your presence beautiful, fresh, so that you can offer it to your beloved one. And each child had to go to the garden and pick up four pebbles. And wash them. And they can make a little bag and put these pebbles in. Although the meditation was designed for children, but adults, they love it. Many of them practice pebble meditation. So the children sit in a circle, 5, 6, or 7, and one of them play the role of bell master. By the way, in order to be a bell master, like a brother Fabho, he came from Sweden, a Swedish monk. You have to learn how to be a bell master. And maybe today, the children can learn how to invite the bell to sound, to be a bell master. We don't say hitting the bell or striking the bell, but invite the bell to sound. Very gentle, because the bell is a friend, a bodhisattva that helps us stop our dispersion and concentrate and become alive again. So today, maybe the children will have a chance to learn how to invite the bell to sound. So one of the children is a bell master. And in the beginning of the practice, 3 sounds of the bell are invited. And everyone enjoy breathing in and out 3 times after each sound of the bell. And after having made 9 in-breath and out-breath, they begin their pebble meditation. They took the pebble out. They can sit in the lotus position like this also. Because the lotus position is very stable. They put it on the left. And then with their right hand, they pick up the first pebble. And then bring up the first pebble and look at for 1 second. The first pebble represents a flower. And after having recognized the first pebble as representing a flower, the child put that on the palm of his left hand and put it on the right hand and begin to practice breathing in. I see myself as a flower. Breathing out, I feel fresh. 3 times. And when you breathe in, you have to see you as a flower. You don't have to imagine that you are a flower. You see yourself as a flower because you are a kind of flower also. Not only this is a flower, but the human body is also a flower. It's very beautiful, the human body. And we are flowers in the garden of humanity. And each of us is a real flower. When you look at a person, especially when you look at a child, you see that her face is beautiful like a flower. In Chinese, they say flower face. Our face is like a flower. And when you look at the hand of a little boy, it's very cute. It's the flower. And when you look at the foot of a little girl, it's very beautiful. It's a real flower. That the whole body is a flower. And when the child plays, it's a flower that is playing. And when the child sleeps, it's also very beautiful. So you have to recognize the fact that humans are also a kind of flower. We are born as flowers, but some of us do not know how to preserve our flowerness. Some of us do not know how to preserve our freshness. We cry too much. We suffer too much. And we lose some of our freshness, our flowerness. And that is why this practice is to help restore your flowerness so that you'll be fresh again. You don't have to imagine that you are a flower. You were originally a flower. And with the practice of mindful breathing, mindful smiling, you can be a flower again. If you have cried too much, your eyes are no longer limpid, like clear water, less than a flower. But if you practice like this, your eyes will be clear again, fresh again. So this practice is to restore our freshness, our beauty. Breathing in, I see myself as a flower, as a real flower. Breathing out, I feel fresh and beautiful. 3 times. And then you pick up the first pebble, you put it on your right. And then you pick up the second pebble. And the second one represents a mountain. Imagine a mountain, solid, stable. And there are those of us who are stable and solid like a mountain. We cannot be carried away, pulled away easily by emotions, by anger, by fear, by craving. So there is somehow a mountain in us. That is our stability, our solidity. So this second pebble is to help us restore our stability, our solidity. A person who is not stable is not a happy person, and we cannot count on her, we cannot count on him. If a person is solid, stable, we can count on that person. That is why we can cultivate more solidity, stability for us. And we have something very precious to offer him or her. When you become a flower again, your presence is more beautiful, fresh. And that is a better gift that you can make to him or her. when you are more stable and solid, this is a better gift that you can offer to him or her. Breathing in, I see myself as a mountain. Breathing out, I feel solid. 3 times. And then the third pebble representing still water, calm, peace. This time when the water is so still that it reflects exactly the sky, the blue sky, the clouds, the trees, the mountains. And you can aim your camera and take a picture of the sky. You aim the camera at the water. When you are calm, when you are peaceful, you see things very clearly. You do not distort reality. If you are calm, you are clear. And anger and fear will not arise. And that is why the third pebble is to help us restore our peace, our calm. As still water, it reflects things as they truly are, not distorting them. And that is why cultivating peace, cultivating tranquility, make our presence more valuable so that we can offer it to our beloved one. That's true love. Breathing in, I see myself as still water. Breathing out, I reflect things as they truly are. A peaceful person is a happy person. And that is why all of us have to cultivate more peace, more calm. With the practice of mindful breathing, mindful sitting, mindful walk. 3 times, breathing in, I see myself as still water. Breathing out, I reflect things as they are water or reflecting. And then the last pebble, representing space. Breathing in, I see myself as space. Breathing out, I feel free. A person who does not have space in her heart, a person full of anger, fear, projects, worries, cannot be a happy person. That is why we need more air, more space, more freedom. If you love someone, you might like to offer him or her more space. That is the most precious gift. Offer space is possible, but you have to offer space to yourself first before you can offer it to your beloved one. If your heart is full of worries, projects, fear, there is no any space left for you to enjoy. And there is not much that you can offer to him or to her. Look at the moon sailing across the sky. The moon is beautiful because around her a lot of space. So it should be free in order to be happy. And stepping into freedom is possible. And in this retreat, we will learn how to step into freedom so that we have plenty of space inside of our heart and around us. A person who is not free cannot be a happy person, and she does not have much to offer to her beloved one. Breathing in, I see myself as space. Breathing out, I feel free. You impose so many things on you. You have no space left. And you impose so many things on the other person. And she or he can hardly breathe. That's not love. To love means to offer space, freedom. And this is possible with the practice of breathing, walking, that has the power to liberate. Breathing in, I see myself as space. Breathing out, I feel free. And you have finished your power meditation. You put them back into the little bag. And you hear one more sound of the bell. You bow and you finish. But today, the children may have a chance to learn more about Pebble meditation and inviting the bell. When you hear the small bell, you may like to stand up and bow to the Sangha before you go out and practice with the young monks and nuns. I mean the younger one only. Stand up. Turn around to the Sangha. Stand up only for the children. The children turn around and look. Have a good day. Enjoy your practice. There are places here, the rooms here. There are dozens of seats here. Dear friends, last week we had one beautiful retreat organized at the Magnolia Grove Meditation Practice Center in the state of Mississippi. There was about 900 people attending. There was one architect, and after the retreat, he had the idea to build a high stupa, a pagoda, 16 floors, representing the 16 exercises of mindful breathing. I was so impressed by the teaching of the Buddha about the practice of mindful breathing, the 16 exercises. He wanted to build something high, and each floor represents one exercise. And he wanted to do it. If imagine that the stupa has been built, and we are now visiting the first the floor. The first exercise is breathing in. I know I am breathing in. Breathing out. I know I am breathing out. And that exercise is to be aware of our in breath and our out breath. That's the first exercise. It sounds very simple. Awareness of in-breath and out-breath. By the way, there is a filmmaker in Vietnam who also wants to make a film about 16 exercises on mindful breathing. They came to Plum Village, and I gave them a discourse in Vietnamese about the practice of 16 exercises. And I said that you have to practice during the time you make the film, otherwise the film will have no value. So the practice of the first exercise consists of being aware of your in-breath and your out-breath. Breathing in, I know this is an in-breath. An in-breath is going on. Breathing out, this is an out-breath. An out-breath is going on. And that is, that sounds very simple. But the effect can be very deep. Because when you focus your attention on your in-breath, and only on your in-breath, you release everything else. Your worries about future, your fear about future, your uncertainty about future, you release. And your regret about the past, your sorrow about the past, you release. And you also release your projects and everything else. So just breathing in mindfully, you become a free person. Freedom lasts three seconds or 4 seconds. If you are truly truly mindful and concentrated. But who prevents you from continuing the practice? If you breathe like that before during 5 minutes, you have 5 minutes of freedom. freedom from all these things. We are not talking about political freedom here. We are talking about the freedom from fear, anger, the past, the future, and so on. And freedom is possible with the practice. And when we first hear of the first exercise, we have the impression that this is a very, very simple, so easy. But if you continue to practice, we will notice that it's a very deep practice, and the result you get from it is very, very, very great. So after you have gone to the second floor, third floor, fourth floor, and up to the 16th floor, and you go down to the first floor again, you see the first floor with a very different eyes. And on the first floor, you are very high. You are on the top also. Therefore, those of us who have practice, we don't see the first exercise as ABC anymore. It is as deep as the top. Because you have gone through all the 15. That is why when you go back to the first floor, the first exercise, you see that it contains everything. And just breathing in and out, you can get what you want. Enlightenment, compassion, the kingdom of God, Pure Land with Buddha, everything. The second exercise of mindful breathing is to follow, to be with your in-breath and out-breath all the way through. Suppose our in-breath lasts 4 seconds. Our in-breath is represented by this marker. 4 seconds, it begins here and ends here. And suppose this finger is our mind. So breathing in, I follow my in-breath. I am with my in-breath all the way through. Breathing out, I am with my in-breath, out-breath, all the way through. It means there is no interruption at all during the process of breathing in and breathing out, even for 1 millisecond. And this is something that comes with the practice. First, we recognize our in-breath as in-breath. Our out-breath and our out-breath. But slowly, we are so mindful, so concentrated, that there is no interruption at all, even for 1 millisecond, during the time of breathing in and breathing out. And during that process, concentration is being built. Mindfulness brings about concentration. And we know, with the experience of the practice, mindfulness and concentration always bring insight. And it may not need a lot of time in order to get insight. It can come right away when mindfulness and concentration are powerful enough. So the second exercise is to be with your in-breath and out-breath all the way through. And with that, the pleasure of breathing in and out increases. our happiness is in function of our mindfulness and concentration. Suppose you are standing with a group of people and contemplating a beautiful sunrise. The more you are mindful, the happier you become. Because if you are very mindful, very concentrated, and then you can get in touch with the beautiful sunrise very deeply. If you are dispersed, the beautiful sunrise is not for you. Although you are standing with another group of people, although the sunrise is in front of you, but you don't enjoy. So mindfulness and concentration help us to get in touch and to enjoy deeply what is there in the here and the now. That is why we say that happiness is a function of mindfulness and concentration. Like when you drink your cup of tea, the more mindful you are, the more concentrated you are, the better the tea is for you, for us. We are truly in touch with the tea, and we appreciate the quality of the tea. And that is why mindfulness is a source of happiness. Mindfulness is a source of joy. Because mindfulness brings us home to the here and the now, and where we can get in touch with many wonders of life that are in us and around us. And getting in touch with these wonders that are refreshing and healing, we make happiness and joy available right in the here and the now. We don't need to run into the future in order to look for happiness. So the second exercise is connected with the first exercise. And the second exercise can improve the quality of breathing and bring happiness and joy. And those of us who know how to practice the first and the second exercise, we enjoy our in-breath and our breath. You just sit there and you breathe. And because you enjoy your in-breath and out-breath, you are a happy person. And the insight can come right away. Breathing in, you find out that you are alive. And to be alive is a miracle. And that is already an insight. Because many people who breathe in and out, who go around, but they don't know that they are alive. They are like people who carry their body, their dead body on their shoulder and circulate around. They do not know that they are alive. So breathing in mindfully is a kind of resurrection. We feel alive. And we celebrate the fact that we are alive. And this morning, Thay Pháp Niệm also gave us the guided meditation on the third exercise, breathing in, I'm aware of my body. The first is to be aware of our breath. And riding on our in-breath, we go home to our body. Our breath belongs to the realm of the body. and riding on our in-breath, we come home to our body. Breathing in, I'm aware of my body. And this is to bring the mind home to the body. Many of us forget that, forget our body in our daily life, especially when we work with a computer. We don't feel the existence of our body anymore. We live in a virtual world, not real. And we may think that it's more important than the real world. We get lost totally in that unreal world. And we spend so many times, so many hours working like that. On the 13th of September, we spent one day practicing with the people in the Google headquarters. 600 of them, Googlers, came and practiced with us, sitting, walking, breathing, eating in mindfulness, free from their computers. Many of them work more than 15 hours a day with their computer. They forget that they have a body. They don't feel the presence of their body anymore. And while working like that, they continue to accumulate more tension into their body. So this practice is to bring our mind back to our body and feel the presence of our body. It's very important. Our body, our mind become embodied. It's kind of happy reunion between body and mind. Our monastic brothers and sisters in Bangladesh, they program a bell of mindfulness in their computer. Every 15 minutes, they hear the bell. They stop and they go back to their body and they smile to their body. It helps. You may like to download the sound of the bell from our website and use it to practice the third exercise of mindful breathing. Breathing in, I am aware of my whole body. Breathing out, I smile to my body with compassion, with love. We have accumulated a lot of tension in our body. And there is pain in our body. We don't know what to do in order to reduce the pain and release the tension. And this is to do it. In a scripture, in a text, in the discourse given by Buddha, the contemplation of the body, there is an exercise. And the Buddha said, suppose a farmer goes up to the cellar and brings down a bag of seeds. And he opens one end of the bag and allow all the seeds in the bag to flow on the floor. And with eyes still in good condition, he recognizes different kinds of seeds. This is a kidney beans, this is mung beans, This is a seed of corn and so on. So the practitioner does the same thing in a lying position or sitting position. He uses his spiritual eyes in order to recognize all part of his body. He goes from the top of his head down to his feet. And he recognizes every part of the body. Breathing in, I'm aware of my eyes. Breathing out, I smile to my eyes. Breathing in, I'm aware of my brain. Breathing out, I smile to my brain. And you continue like this. That exercise is recommended by the Buddha. It is like a scanning the body. Scanning the body not with X-ray, but the ray of mindfulness. And you may like to stay longer with one part of your body. And that can help you to recognize that part of the body and embrace it tenderly, especially when that part of your body is ailing. Suppose you come down to your liver. You have a problem of liver. You might have consumed a lot of fat. You have drunk a lot of alcohol, so your liver has been calling for help. Your liver may have sent you day and night a message, SOS, SOS. But you ignore. So now, with this exercise, you come to it. Breathing in, I'm aware of my liver. Breathing out, I smile to my liver. So with the energy of mindfulness generated by the practice of mindful breathing, you recognize your liver and you embrace it tenderly with compassion. And some insight may come that your liver suffers and you have to change the way of eating or consuming and so on. And that is the meditation of compassion already directed to your own body. If you don't love your body, if you don't take care of your body, how can you love and take care of someone else? Love always begins with ourselves. We should be kind to our body first. And this is the practice. When you come to your heart, you practice breathing in, I'm aware of my heart. Breathing out, I smile to my heart. Embracing your heart with mindfulness and tenderness will bring a lot of comfort to your heart. Your heart has worked day and night, non-stop. And your heart may have suffered. It may have smoked, drunk, stay up, late in the night. And that's not friendly acts to our heart. And when we come to our heart, recognizing its presence, and embrace it tenderly, the insight might come. And you want to preserve that vital organ of our body. And you might decide to stop smoking or drinking. And that is the insight that can come right away when you practice getting in touch with your heart. That those of us who do not have a heart like ours, they are fearful that one day they will suffer a stroke or something like that. And the deepest desire of this person, these people, is to have a normal heart like ours. And now we have a normal heart, but we don't cherish it enough. We don't protect that condition of happiness that we are having. So embracing our heart with mindfulness, we know what to do and what not to do in order to preserve that condition of happiness that we do have now. When we come to our eyes, we may notice that a paradise of forms and colors is available because of the fact that we have eyes still in good conditions. Because I have eyes still in good condition, that is why that paradise of forms and colors is available to me. I just sit on the grass and open my eyes, and the paradise is mine. So you cherish the presence of your eyes, one of the conditions of happiness that you have. So the Buddha proposed that we go through our body with mindful breathing and recognize every part of our body and embrace it with tenderness and compassion. And this is very healing, especially when we come to a part that is ailing. We may like to stay longer with that part, embrace it eternally. It will help with the healing. We may continue taking the medicines that the doctor gave us, but we should not rely on medicine alone, because this practice will help accelerate the healing. And you may reduce the amount of medicine you use, because this is the basic practice of healing. We know that when our body is able to relax and release tension, it will get the power to heal itself. Our body has a natural power of self-healing. If we allow our body the time to rest. But many of us work our body too hard. An animal in a forest, when she's deeply wounded, the animal knows what to do. The animal looks for a quiet place and lie down. That is a traditional wisdom handed down by many generations of ancestors. An animal like that does not have a doctor, a pharmacist. And she knows that the only way to heal is to lie down and rest. And the animal should not think of eating, should not think of running after another animal. Just lay down and rest. And maybe 3-4 days later, it's healed. And that's the wisdom. We humans, we did have that kind of wisdom. But now we have lost. We believe only in medicine. We don't know how to rest anymore. Even if we have a holiday, we have to learn how to rest. And this practice of deep total relaxation will help us to restore help our body to restore its power to heal itself. Maybe today Sister True Emptiness can offer us a session of deep relaxation. And you may like to do it once a day at home after the retreat. And the fourth exercise is to release the tension in the body. Breathing in, I'm aware of the tension in my body. Breathing out, I allow my body to release the tension. And we can do that, practice that, a session of total relaxation in the family. One member of the family can lead a session of total relaxation for the whole family to attend, maybe in the living room. In the beginning, we might use a recorded guided meditation of total relaxation, but after that, we can do it by ourselves. So the first four exercises of mindful breathing have to do more with the body. But we know that the mind and the feelings are already there in the body. With the fifth, we generate a feeling of joy. And the sixth, we generate a feeling of happiness. Mindful breathing helps us to bring our mind home to our body so that we can be established truly in the here and the now. And when we are truly in the here and the now, we can recognize the many conditions of joy and happiness that are already there in the here and the now. And with the recognition of these elements of happiness, conditions of happiness, joy and happiness naturally arise. It means that any good practitioner can generate a feeling of joy and happiness whenever she wants with the practice of mindfulness. Because going home to the here and the now, we will touch the many conditions of happiness that are already available, more than enough. Every time we have a friend speak in retreat, our friends always sing the song Keskonatong Puk Aitri Ahu. What do we have to wait? We can be happy right here and right now. If we sit down and try to write down the conditions of happiness that we already have, one page is not enough. 2 pages are not enough. 3 pages are not enough. There's so many. More than we need in order to be happy right in the here and the now. We are very lucky, much luckier than many people. And yet we feel that happiness is not possible now. We have to run into the future and seek for more conditions of happiness. And that has become a habit. The Buddha had a disciple, a lay disciple, who was a businessman, whose name is Sudatta. Anatta Nika. It's him who offered the Buddha a beautiful park so that the Buddha can make it a practice center for his monks in the city of Shravasti. One day he came to visit the Buddha with several hundreds of his colleagues, all of them businessmen. And the Buddha knew that businessmen, they think a little bit too much about the future, their success. That is why that day he gave a discourse where he teaches, he taught the practice of living happily in the present moment. He said, "Gentlemen, you don't have to go to the future in order to be happy. Happiness is possible right here and right now. You have enough condition to be happy right here and right now." And in that discourse, I remember the expression "living happily in the present moment" is repeated 5 times. Drista, Dharma, Sukha, Vihara, living happily, dwelling happily in the here and the now. With the practice of mindfulness. So as a practitioner, we should be able to bring in a moment of joy, a moment of happiness, whenever we want. Just by going home to the here and the now and recognize the many conditions of joy and happiness that are already there. Remember, breathing in, I'm aware of my eyes. Breathing out, I know a paradise of forms and colors is available now. Happiness is born right away. So mindfulness, concentration, is a source of joy and happiness. Mindfulness. Joy. Cái này là ngược rồi đó. Joy and happiness born from mindfulness. This is the secret of the practice, generating joy and happiness with the practice of mindfulness. Mindfulness is a source of joy and happiness, and it is within ourselves because everyone has the capacity of being mindful and concentrated. And concentration is also a source of joy and happiness. And there is another way to bring joy and happiness is to let go. Usually we think that to be happy, you have to get more. But the opposite may be true. To give up, to let go. There are many things we cannot let go, and that's why we continue to suffer. We may think of these things as essential to our well-being, to our happiness. It may be true that these things are the very obstacle for us to be happy. It may be helpful to write down the name of these things on a sheet of paper and consider giving up, releasing. The first thing we may like to release is our idea of happiness. Every one of us has an idea as how he or she can be happy. And that is very dangerous. We may think that happiness is not possible until I got this, or until I get rid of this. And you are stuck in that idea, and you continue to suffer. That may not be true. Remember, the Soviet Union was caught in the idea that only Marxism, communism is the way, the only way to make the country powerful and prosperous. That's an idea. And during 70 years, they have imprisoned so many people who voice the opposite. They have created a lot of tragedy and suffering just because of one idea. But finally, after 70 years, they gave up the idea. So each of us may be caught in an idea about how we can be happy. So we should sit down and reconsider that idea. And if we are able to release that idea, maybe happiness can come right away. By itself, you don't have to go and look for it. This is the teaching of the Buddha. There are many things we cannot get rid of because we think we don't have the courage, and that is why we continue to drag on the path of suffering. We need some courage in order to let go. Suppose you live in a polluted city. You suffer day and night because of the noise, the dust, the smell. And your friend said that, well, let's get out of the city and spend 2 days in the countryside. You say, no, I have so many things to do. But if you got the courage to release that idea, in 1 hour, you can already get out of the city and you begin to see the rolling hills, the blue sky, the full moon, and the breeze on your cheeks. There is a joy, there is happiness, because you have been able to leave behind the city. That is an example. Happiness and joy born from releasing, from letting go. Each of us has things to let go. On my path of practice, I have let go many things. And I get lighter and lighter. Especially ideas. So I wish that my friends would do the same. We have the time to look back and to see what we can let go. Letting go is a source of happiness. Let go, my dear. One day the Buddha was having lunch with some of the monks, relaxingly. And one farmer came and asked them whether they have seen his cows passing by. And the Buddha said, no, we have not seen any cows passing by. You may... And the farmer looks very desperate. He said that all his cow has run away from him, and he had two acres of sesame seed eaten up by the insect. Dear friends, I'm going to kill myself. How can I survive with that? The Buddha said, dear friends, we have not seen your cows going by here. You may like to look for them in the either opposite direction. And when the farmer is gone, the Buddha turned around and looked at his monks and smiled. He said, my dear friends, you are very lucky. You don't have any cows to lose. So the practice is to list the name of your cows on a sheet of paper and look deeply to see whether you can release some of them. The more you release, the happier you become. With the fifth and the sixth, we come to the realm of feelings and emotions. And the fifth is to generate a feeling of joy for yourself and for the other person. You can release, but you can also help the other person release. He may be caught in an idea or in something. And you can help him or her to release that. The seventh exercise is to recognize, to be aware of the feeling of pain. A painful feeling. When it manifests, we as a good practitioner, we should be able to be there and recognize simple recognition of the painful feeling. This is not to fight against it, not to try to cover up the painful feeling. Just practice breathing mindfully or walking mindfully and recognize it. Breathing in, I know there is a painful feeling in me or a painful emotion in me. And we should not exaggerate. The painful feeling may come from the body, physical body. The painful feeling may come from a perception. And with the practice of mindful breathing, we can generate mindfulness. And with that energy of mindfulness, we can recognize the painful feeling and begin to look at it, to see whether it has come from the body are a perception from the mind. In fact, first of all, we might not know what is the root of that pain. It may be a kind of pain that has been transmitted to us by our ancestors. That is why sometimes we ask the question, why I have got this kind of pain in my life? I have not done anything. Bear anything of that kind, and yet it is in me. So it may be something that has been transmitted from many generations of ancestors. And with the practice of looking deeply, we may be able to find the root. I remember that time I went to India and tried to be in touch with the untouchable community. And it was a gentleman belonging to that community that organized for me to go and visit children and adults in that community. We were traveling by train and buses. And I was sitting on a bus with him. I sit close to the window and he sat on my right. I was contemplating the beauty landscape outside. And when I looked back, I saw him very tense. I said, "Dear friend, why are you so tense? I know that you try to make my visit pleasant, to make me happy, but I am very happy. There's no reason why you have to worry anymore. Just sit back and relax and enjoy the beauty outside." He said, "Okay." And he sat back. He sat back. And a few minutes later, when I looked back to him, I saw him tense again. And I noticed that this kind of tension and suffering was not born in his lifetime only. It was born during previous generations. The ancestors have suffered during many generations of discrimination. They tried their best to survive, to confront the difficulties that has transmitted to them every child. It takes strong practice in order to transform that long habit transmitted by ancestors. Whether it is suffering or discrimination, you don't want to suffer, you don't want to discriminate, and yet the seed is in you because it has been transmitted to you by ancestors. But the first step of practice is to just recognize the painful feeling and not try to combat, to suppress. This practice is called simple recognition of the pain, painful feeling. And do not exaggerate. Breathing in, I know there is pain in me, breathing out, I go do my best to take care of the pain. And that is the practice of the seventh exercise. The Buddha gave the image of a person who was struck, is struck by an arrow. It's painful. But a few minutes later, a second arrow came and struck exactly at the same spot. So the pain is not only double, it can become 10 times more intense. So the practice is not to allow the second arrow to strike you. And the second arrow is your exaggeration, your anger, your fear, your reaction. Just recognize the pain at its ease and do not try, do not imagine too much. Do not exaggerate. Do not let anger, fear, despair to overcome you. And that is the second arrow. By looking, recognizing it by yourself, or maybe with the help of a doctor or of friends in the Dharma, let's try to recognize it as it is and not exaggerate, without fear, anger, imagination, despair. It will make the pain not only double, but 100 times more intense. There was a man who was diagnosed with cancer of the throat. And the doctor gave him 3 months to live. But he died only after 3 weeks. And in the autopsy, they found out that there's no cancer in the throat. There's a little bit of cancer somewhere else in the body, but not enough to kill him. He died because of the second arrow. Despair, anger, fear, imagination. So at least we can practice that. We have to recognize the pain that it is, and do not let despair, anger, fear, imagination to overwhelm us. And the eighth exercise is to release, to embrace the feeling, the painful feeling, or the painful emotion. There is a seed of fear, there is a seed of anger, there is a seed of despair in every one of us. In the Buddhist tradition, we speak of consciousness in terms of seeds. Sanskrit word is bija. So in Buddhist psychology, we speak of store consciousness. and mind consciousness. There are many layers of consciousness, but we can distinguish at least two layers: store consciousness and mind consciousness. Store consciousness has the duty to receive informations from the body, from the mind, and process these informations and preserve all of them. And the content of store consciousness is seed. Like the data. If in nuclear physics, they speak of matter as being made by subatomic particles, then in Buddhist psychology, we say that consciousness is made of particle called bijas, very tiny, you cannot see it. And they're all here, down here. And store consciousness has the power to preserve all of them. We have a seat of mindfulness. And if we are a good practitioner, the seed of mindfulness grows every day. And when we need the energy of mindfulness, we have it right away and powerful. We also have a seed of anger here. And when someone come, say something and does something to water the seed, to touch up the seed of anger in us, it will manifest up here as a zone of energy. Down there it's called bija seed. And when it manifests up here, it's called a mental formation. Citta samskara. Formation is a Buddhist term, meaning phenomenon. This flower is a formation. This bell is a formation. This sheet of paper is a formation. Many conditions have come together and help this manifest, composite things. If we analyze a flower, we will see the sunshine, the cloud, the soil, and so on. So this is a composite thing. It is a formation. It is a physical formation. My hand is a physiological formation. My anger is a mental formation. And in our school of Buddhism, we speak about 51 varieties of mental formations, and anger is one of them. Mindfulness is another one. So when the seed of anger down here has manifested as the mental formation called anger, a practitioner practice mindful breathing in order to invite the seed of mindfulness to come up. And there we have another zone of energy called mindfulness, Asian mindfulness. And this energy of mindfulness is to recognize the other kind of energy. Breathing in, I know anger is in me. Breathing out, I will take good care of my anger. Recognize. Recognize and then embrace. There is no attempt to fight, to suppress. There is no enemy here. The anger, the fear, the despair is also us. And mindfulness is also us. Mindfulness is taking care of anger. It's like a big brother taking care of his younger brother. When the mother hear the baby crying, she put anything she's holding down and she goes to the room of the baby and pick the baby up and hold the baby tenderly into her arms. Although she does not know what is wrong with the baby, but the fact that she's holding the baby tenderly can make the baby suffer less right away. The energy of tenderness begins to penetrate into the body of the baby. So this is the same. We don't know what is the nature of this anger or despair yet. But the fact that we can recognize and embrace the energy of anger like this can help us suffer less, can bring a relief already. And that is the object of the eighth exercise, embracing pain. And of course, there are other exercises that help us to go further in order to transform, to heal. But here this exercise is just to recognize and to hold. Practicing as a Sangha, we have the privilege, we have the advantage of the collective energy of mindfulness. If you are a beginner in the practice, our mindfulness may not be strong enough to embrace our anger or our fear. That is why we can make good use of the Sangha's collective energy. We come to the Sangha and sit among brothers and sisters in the practice, and allowed the collective energy of the Sangha to embrace our pain, our sorrow. Dear Sangha, this is my pain, this is my sorrow. Please help embrace it with me. And we feel better after 15 or 20 minutes. When everyone practices breathing in and out mindfully, our mind comes into phase and we generate a very powerful energy of mindfulness and peace and compassion that can help embrace the pain of that person and help her to suffer less. And that is why practicing with Sangha is very important. I take refuge in the Sangha is not a declaration of faith. It is a practice. You need a Sangha because you can make good use of the Sangha's energy for your transformation and healing. Therefore, all of us need a Sangha. And therefore, the first thing the Buddha did after enlightenment is to go and look for elements of his Sangha. Every one of us as a practitioner should try to belong to a Sangha or set up a Sangha. With the Sangha, you'll be able to help many people. The practice most of us do is to run away from suffering. We don't want the pain, the sorrow, the despair to come up here. That is why we practice consuming in order to occupy the space of the mind. This is like the living room. This is the basement. And we want to lock our fear, our anger down there. We don't want them to come up. That's our practice. We know that if they come up, we will suffer. That's why we try to suppress. We have that kind of loneliness, emptiness, worries, fear, anger, despair in us. And every time they try to emerge, we feel the landscape of the mind not beautiful. That is why we try to set up a kind of barrier here in order to prevent them from going up. We turn on the television to occupy the living room. We pick up a magazine to read, or we play the music, or we telephone and talk, or we may go and get something to eat if we are not hungry. But we need to eat because we want to forget, to cover up. So this is a very common practice of people in our society, consuming in order to forget, to run away from the suffering inside. And the supermarket provides us with everything in order for us to cover up all the suffering inside. And if we do not know how to practice, these blocks of pain continue to grow. And they try to push hard in order to come up. And we try to push hard to prevent them. And therefore, we create a state of bad circulation in our consciousness. And there is a time when symptoms of mental illness begin to appear because of the stagnation of the situation of bad circulation. That is why the Buddha said that, don't do that. Allow your anger, your fear to come up. If you are a practitioner, you should not be afraid because you know how to generate the energy of mindfulness in order to recognize and embrace. You might invite them to come up. My anger, if you come up, I will take good care of you. So if we are capable of generating mindfulness and concentration, we are ready for them to come up and we will embrace them. It's like giving our anger, our fear, our afflictions a mindfulness bath. Yeah. And after having embraced it for some time, it will go down there again and losing some of its strength. It's like, and the eighth exercise can already do that. And you know how to embrace tenderly your pain, your anger, your fear. You make it a little bit weaker. And after some time, you go down to the original place here. And you have confidence. Next time, when it comes, I just do that. You are no longer afraid. So by doing so, you restore a state of a situation of good circulation in your consciousness. And you heal. The symptoms of mental illness will disappear. Just because you are able to restore circulation in your psyche. And with the nine exercise, the practitioner recognize every mental formation when they manifest, whether they are negative or positive or neutral. Because mind is like a river, and that river is made of mental formations. Every mental formation is a drop of water in the river. And a good practitioner should be able to recognize any mental formation that just manifest, and we are able to call it by its true name, whether it is fear or anger or jealousy and so on. When I was at the Buddhist Institute, only 17, I had to memorize all these 51 mental formations, because every time one of them come up, you have to call it by its name. And if it is a good one, you try to entertain them and keep them as long as possible. And if it is a negative one, you don't suppress, but you learn to embrace it tenderly so that it will lose some of its strength. Tomorrow we shall continue.